Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Welcome to another episode of Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dave Melton, site manager for Second City Hockey, and I've got my two usual line mates with me here on this Wednesday evening. And first off, it is the analytics darling of Second City Hockey, Shepard Price.
I am not nearly as thrilling as Phil the Thrill Kurashev, but man, oh man, it was that exciting.
I'm most proud of coming up with Filthy Kurashev, spelled P-H-I-L-T-H-Y. Isn't Phil the Thrill, isn't that Phil Kessel?
Yes, it is, but I'm going to make the argument for now on that Kurashev deserves it more.
Well, we're gonna have a lot of talks about that goal because, wow, like that's just... That's as excited as I've been about. Well, we'll save that conversation for later because I've got some thoughts on that about the last time a goal gave me the level of excitement that goal did. But before we get any farther, we've got to also introduce my other line mate this evening, Mil Savage.
Go Bulls.
Go Bulls. Bulls won, Hawks won. They both beat Detroit.
I need a better nickname.
Yeah, I don't know. We still have to we're still workshopping it. I'll have my people get in touch with your people. We'll figure something out and I'll get back to you.
Sounds good.
Yeah, but thanks for tuning into this episode. You can follow us all or most of us on Twitter. Shepherd's on Twitter, well, kind of sometimes at Shepard Price. I am at @_Dave Melton. Mill is at @Mill182. You can follow the Second City Hockey main account at 2ND City Hockey and check out our website, secondcityhockey.com, with plenty of previews and recaps and news, even if just updating about reportedly the Blackhawks going after Russian wingers that are tearing up the KHL right now. But we have all kinds of stuff at the website. And then please follow, rate, review, subscribe this podcast wherever it is you get your podcast, and any 5-star reviews we can get on iTunes would be wildly appreciated. But gentlemen, we are here about an hour after the Blackhawks finished off a 2-game sweep of the lowly Red Wings. Monday night, it was a 3-2 victory in overtime. That was meh. And then Wednesday night, they win 2-0 in regulation. Another game where maybe the process, you like the result. Winning is always better than losing. The process may not have been great in terms of possession and how they played, but they got a win, so I can't get too upset because they keep winning games. So we're not going to go down that road. Let's just talk about Philip Kurashev's goal because that sounds like fun. Shepard, Philip Kurashev's goal. Go ahead.
Yeah, it does not look like a goal a rookie would be able to score because he does literally everything right on that goal, including just clearing defensemen, going through them like Moses through the Red Sea. And in this case, that's apt because the Detroit Red Wings wear red.
Also, it's the start of the Lenten season, and I believe that's there's something in there. My Catholic upbringing is coming up, but yeah, go ahead. Sorry. Yeah, Easter, Lenten, it's all combined. So yeah, perfect timing.
And then deking Jonathan Bernier, who played an otherwise really perfect game out of position, just enough to get that goal. And then he's so casual after the fact, too. Like, he does not celebrate. He's got just the same face on the entire time after that goal.
He had that look of, like, the guy that comes out to your beer league that doesn't belong in that beer league and just skates through five people, scores a goal, and goes, yeah, you know, it's Tuesday.
Yeah. See, if the All-Star game was a thing in the NHL this year, I don't know if it is, and it probably shouldn't be.
Yeah, I don't.
But if it was, I would
believe they are.
Yeah, I would like to see him in the fastest skater competition.
Well, I feel like Hagel might be faster than him. Just watching every time Hagel's and he got any type of any sort of straightaway attempt, like he outskated someone for an icing call tonight that was just visibly way faster than whoever it was he was skating against. But
yeah, they're both very fast.
Yeah, but the thing with the Kuryshev goal, and you touched on it a little bit, but I didn't notice it at first, and whoever they had on, I think it was Anson Carter, mentioned it during the intermission. If you go back and watch that goal, right before he actually tucks it through the legs of Bernier, he does like three or four air dangles that I think he got Bernier to commit one way or the other with these air dangles. I can't believe he even – like he does this all at full speed. He's just going back and forth over the puck in the air, and then he brings his stick down, pulled it out to the forehand, and tucked it through the legs. Like – just a mind-blowing moment for a rookie, and I tease this at the beginning, and this is what the one point I wanted to make. And Shepard, this I think might have been slightly before you jumped into hockey, but the third game, I think it was the third game of Jonathan Toews' career, he scored this ridiculous goal against Colorado. All right, Mill, I think you know
where I'm going. I was going to talk about this.
Okay, well then I will come to you next. But Toews scored this ridiculous goal in his third game, and it was kind of this realization of, holy shit, the Blackhawks really have something here. Now, I don't want to go so far as to make a comparison between Kuryshev and Toews. It's way too far. But when a rookie scores a goal like that, it suggests that there is a very high ceiling of ability within that body. And if he can figure it all out, he's going to be really good. And the fact that he pulled that goal off is just – it's wildly encouraging. So, Mill, what your reaction, I guess, was similar to mine?
Okay, so, yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but that's what I was going to talk about, was that Toews goal never leaves my mind ever. It's just burned into my brain. They didn't have that game televised. So, like, when you had to watch the replays, it's the Colorado call, and the guy's screaming, what a goal, what a move, you know. And I think he was out with Kane and Ruutu for that. And
yes.
it wasn't exactly the same goal, but when Kuryshev scored, first of all, Detroit's terrible. So the Hawks were cutting through the high slot all night, going to the net. Kane had a nice move in the first period, similarly. But they just really, you know, all tried to crash in at once, and he goes around. One guy goes around the next guy. Like, it's nothing. And I'm just like, oh, my God, we got robbed of a Foley call tonight. Foley probably would have spilled his White Russian everywhere.
Yeah, that would have been a very enjoyable goal call. I'm actually pulling up the Toews goal as you mentioned it, because it's funny, he gets in and it's like almost a two on after he walks by one guy just above the faceoff dot. It's almost a two on one with Ruutu, but then Toews just kind of has this look of I got this. And then
you gotta remember too, this is before this is when Savard was a coach.
Yeah.
So I believe, was 07, 08, yeah.
Savard was a coach. It was the Savard era.
And he used Toews differently. So, like, people would always bitch about Toews' production, but it's because Quenneville was, you know, giving him all the dungeon starts because he's the only guy who could win a draw half the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was.
Still true.
Still true, yeah. Still, yeah, nothing changes.
Yeah, and I think, like, there have been some, like Kane obviously has had an insane number of goals that blew your mind. One goal that always stood out to me was, like, four or five seasons ago, Richard Ponick scored some ridiculous goal against Pittsburgh where he, like, pulled it through his skates, kicked it back to his stick, and then buried one right under the bar.
Dick Panic, baby.
Yeah, but that was also, like, five or six seasons into his NHL career. Like, he was in his mid-20s, kind of knew what he was at that point. With Kuryshev being a rookie – is I think that's the thing that is so encouraging about it, because it suggests that there is a very high offensive potential within him, and he's capable of even more than he's done so far. And like I said, he's a very young player. It's his first NHL season. He's only, 15, 20 games into it at this point. So
he hasn't played a lot either.
No.
Yeah, no.
Did he get up to 10 minutes tonight finally? 10:07. There we go. But
this game, he should have played 20.
Yeah, well, yeah. After that goal, might as well just let him go.
Yeah.
Well, he's had some bigger. Like he had 14-45 against the first Detroit game Monday night. He played against Columbus. He played a season high 15-27. Or excuse me, that was the second highest. He played 16-50 against Carolina on February 2nd. So it's getting a little better. But Shepard, you sounded like you were going to say something.
I'm very much looking forward to when Jonathan Toews comes back, and then Kurashev and Kubalik are probably his wings. That's going to be a line
that could be,
do things. They're going to tilt the ice like you won't believe.
That could be a fun line. Yeah, I think that's the thing I keep with this team. That's the thing I keep in the back of my mind. Ideally, Toews and Doc both come back at some point, probably next season, and they're healthier and all that. But it's like trying to imagine what this team could look like if you bring back their top two centers. And I feel like it would be a significant, it's going to be, any team is going to improve if you put their top two centers back into the lineup. The question is how much. And it's entirely a hypothetical thing. And we still don't even know what's going on with Toews. So I don't want to go too far down that road, but you know, we talk a lot. I've mentioned a lot about how the process isn't as good as you want it to be. And I don't know if it's going to get that way at any point this season because of the guys they're missing. So the thought is maybe next season when you get these guys back in the lineup, it looks a little bit more, they're a little bit better at 5-on-5 hockey. And then you can really start talking about having a good team. And I guess one reason why there's so much optimism about this team is because of the guy in net. Kevin Lankinen had his first career shutout this evening. I think it was 29 saves he made. And Shepard, yep. You mentioned this in your recap that you wrote at secondcityhockey.com. And I wanted you to talk about this a little bit more because save for maybe the last 5 to 10 minutes of the third period when things really got sideways, Detroit didn't have a ton of sustained pressure in this game. And didn't seem like a lot of second and third chances. And I guess I wanted you to talk more about, give some more specifics on the defensive performance tonight in front of Lankinen.
Yeah. So there's a few metrics that are really important here. I mean, the 2.72 expected goals against are always going to stick out, but that's because Detroit just heaped shots on net. They weren't very good shots is the thing. They had an average shot distance of 35 feet, which is horrible. They had five high danger shots to 14 low danger shots. Yeah.
What I was going to say was that 272, that was throughout the entire game, right?
That was throughout the entire game. That included all three power plays for Detroit.
Okay. Because I remember looking at the even strength numbers and the Hawks were like the expected goals column is actually pretty close.
It was 1.6 even strength. And, yeah.
Yeah. So at 5-on-5, they were okay.
Not bad. Yeah, they were okay. I mean, the Blackhawks themselves offensively did not perform great, just two high danger chances all game. But they limited Detroit just six across 5-on-5. And again, they mostly kept them to the outside and far away, and they made Kevin Lankinen's job and life a lot easier tonight.
And that's where, like, I think there's like an element of confirmation bias right here, because if like, it's one thing, like the Blackhawks played good defense, it sounds like, and they limited Detroit's opportunities. They didn't let them get second and third chances, which kind of helped Lankinen get this first career shutout. But on the other hand, it was against Detroit, who's just not a good team. So it's like, you can take the optimist side of it and say the Blackhawks played good defense and prevented all these chances, or you can take the pessimistic side and say, well, it was against a shitty team, so who cares? But I don't know, Mill, I don't know where you fall in either of those mindsets.
Well, first off, you're absolutely right. Detroit is terrible. Let's not
forget this, that the Red Wings are really bad.
I think it bears
mentioning as much as possible.
Yeah, I love it. But like, here's the issue. This is a weird year with the schedule, and this is the fourth time already they've played each other. So the book is out on what teams look like. They know it by now.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not a good game in general. Like, I'm not saying the Hawks didn't play terrible, but like, not a lot of, you know, a lot of power play chances, a lot of penalties between both teams. It was a pretty sloppy game. The exits and entries of both zones were kind of sloppy. And it's just, if they're going to continue to win like this, it's fun for us to know they are not going to get their ass beat every game. But if you make the playoffs because of this and then they go, oh, we're good going forward and we have our two centers coming back, it's like, well, I think you're in for a rude awakening when this coach has to roll against a bunch of good teams in an 82-game season.
Yeah, I think that's very much the question surrounding this whole team is, and then I think that's why I keep coming back to the process. Like, I mean, no one's calling them, like, even if they somehow squeak into the playoffs this year, which is going to feel like a long shot, especially with the way you have Tampa, Florida, and Carolina seem like they're going to run away with playoff spots. And then maybe between them, Columbus and Dallas, maybe those are the three teams that compete for it. Even if they luck into the playoffs, they'll probably get smoked by Tampa in the first round. And that's fine. Like, if the Blackhawks played well enough to get to a playoff spot, that's miles ahead of where we thought they were going to be at the start of the season. But then if they take, you know, if they only get there because they're propped up by the goaltending and the power play and their 5-on-5 play remains shitty, and, you know, Taves and Dot come back next season and the 5-on-5 product does not improve, then you're really in trouble because you've committed to the product is not improving at all overall. It's just kind of lucking into wins. And then if next season the power play sucks, then we're really going to have some issues.
Yeah, exactly. This power play is driving play. Insanely. Yeah,
and they're also, I mean, they've won so many games in overtime. Like, they have, tonight was their fifth regulation win out of the nine they have. So, you know, I guess what the overall point I'm trying to make with this team is, like enjoy the wins. Absolutely. Don't get me wrong. Like, the Kershaw goal tonight, like, Mill, I saw you mention you almost fell off your couch. I jumped out of my seat. Like, that was, and just, it was fun watching the entire Twitter timeline explode into all caps and exclamation points after that goal. Like, that's fun. Those are things that we haven't had much of the last two or three seasons. But understand what you're watching. Like, it's still not, it's nowhere near a finished product. There's a lot of room for improvement. And maybe, I think the hope that I have is that maybe you get to April, maybe those that week or two of games in May, and maybe there's signs that they're starting to progress in the 5-on-5 product. You know, right now, like, ride the goaltending, ride the power play, whatever. But if I wanted to take something encouraging out of the season now, like, I think the bar is higher than it was back in early January. Now it's, you want to see some improvement of the guys on the ice. You want to see improvement at 5-on-5 play. That'll suggest this team is going to be better in the long term when they get their other injured players back.
Something, yeah, I want. Go ahead. I was going to say, to touch on Doc coming back, though, you know, it concerned me a little bit seeing him on TV the other night on that. They had those Valentine's ads or whatever, and he had like a full blown cast on. It wasn't like his wrist was wrapped up. And Tyler Johnson's a good example of a guy who broke his wrist and then lost a lot of that in the dot, things like that.
Yeah, I mean, so, he's still, Doc's what, still 19, right? He's still,
yeah. Oh, he's still going to develop and be a good player. I'm just saying, like, I don't know as far as the possession, 5-on-5, winning draws, stuff like that. It's a little concerning when someone cracks their wrist like that.
No.
I mean, he was still learning when he got hurt, though. It's a good thing.
It's not ideal. I'll give you that. I mean, nothing about that situation is ideal, and I think
it's terrible.
Even he just turned 20 on January 21st. So, God, he was born in 2001. Holy shit, we're old.
I'm dead Royal Rumble.
But, I mean, ideally he's on the ice and playing. So, and anytime a guy has a big injury like that, you're worried about recovering fully and not losing the ability that made him a number three overall pick. But that's another thing we can worry about next year. We're trying to stay in the moment, Mel, trying not to get too upset with ourselves.
And I also worry less about a kid who's still got probably teenage hormones going.
Yeah. Don't you remember being 20 years old and healing all the time, Mel?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
It's going to be a lot easier for him.
I drank too much during that era to remember, but you know what? I think once he grows into his body, he will be a beast, like, even more so. I mean, he should never lose a board battle once he's like 22. But, like, it's just one of those things where you're like, man, that, like, getting, you know, right wrist, it's like, oh, that sucks.
Yeah. And while we're on the topic of Blackhawks top 10 picks, We should also mention that Adam Boqvist returned to the lineup this evening. I'm trying to find his ice time because I don't think he played a ton. The Blackhawks went back to that 11 forward 70 approach, which is, I guess, fine if that's what you're with. If I have this sorted correctly, Natural Stat Trick has him at 557. That's got to be incorrect. I must have.
He played at least like 3 minutes on the power play. It was 328 on the power play. I had him at 12 in the recap. 12 plus.
Okay. Maybe it hasn't updated or whatever, but I didn't think that was correct as I was saying it out loud. But I don't know. Shepard, you wrote the recap, so I know this was something fresh in your mind. Anything that you saw or stood out? I found it. He played 12:50 this evening. But
yeah.
Shepard, any thoughts on Boqvist?
He had two high danger chances, and neither of them were in his role on the power play, where he was sort of playing up and a more forward-ish role.
Mm-hmm.
It was at 5-on-5, which is wild.
Because I thought it was defenseman. Wasn't it during 4-on-4 play? He jumped up and had that backhand shot.
Yeah. It might have been, because defensemen don't usually do high danger chances. I mean, they have done it recently for the Blackhawks, because Ian Mitchell's goal was high danger and Nicholas Beaudin's goal was high danger in that game. But it's two high danger chances in a game is wild for a defenseman.
Well, that's what he's supposed to do. So
exactly.
I think that's one of my concerns with him. Concerns might be a strong word, but I wanted to see him do something cool, essentially. You know, maybe not quite a Kurashev level goal, but you know, watch him like skate through two or three people in the zone and set up a really good chance or take the opportunity himself. Even if he doesn't score, just something that just flashed that offensive ability that he did when he was that got him drafted and he displayed while he's playing in the OHL with London. And I think, you know, getting that scoring chance today was one of those flashes of the ability that he has. So hopefully you see more of that over the rest of the season, because that's another guy that, seems like he has a lot of potential, seems like he has a very high ceiling, and is a guy the Blackhawks are going to need to develop if they're going to get this rebuild, retool, whatever the hell you want to call it, on the rails.
Yeah, I'd like to see him not defer as much. I think that was a good start tonight.
Right.
I mean, he can walk the blue line like crazy, and they haven't had a guy like that in a long time. But it's almost like they stifled him into, like, don't shoot, and that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and I think that that could be a coaching thing. It could also be him just having the gun-shy nature of a young player, where sometimes they're trying to set themselves up for the perfect opportunity instead of just taking the opportunities that are presented to them. So the one thing that surprised me is I was going through some of the numbers at Natural Stat Trick today. He's actually one of the better Blackhawks players with all the possession numbers. Like, he's top three or four or five in the Corsi numbers, shot share, expected goals, high danger percentage, all that stuff. He's up there, and his offensive zone starts aren't like egregiously high. I think he was around 60 or so. So that was encouraging because I didn't know that about him.
What's his Fenwick?
That's actually one of the least important stats.
wow.
Corsi, wow. Or expected goals.
No, I'm just joking. But in all seriousness, no, it's nice to see the guy. And the guy, like I said, the guy can just move out there. Like, it's, you know, he's an optimal quarterback for a power play.
But Shepard, you didn't like where they put him on the power play, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he's a quarterback, and they sort of made him a forward, which is a wild take because defensemen are not forwards, and that's sort of why they become defensemen.
Yeah, it's like the Tom Brady trying to catch the pass in the Super Bowl thing.
Yeah, exactly. Only Nick Foles can do that.
Right, we don't have Nick Foles.
Jesus.
That's Marian Hossa. He's gone.
Yeah, exactly. But, putting him at, like, the middle is sort of where they put him. And he's not – I saw him go near the net and sort of act like a high-danger threat, and that was wild.
He's not the guy that he's the guy, like, directly right in the middle of, like, in the center slot, right? Like, in the 1-3-1, he is the guy in the middle of all five players, correct?
That's yes, where he is? But that's also like that means there's nobody in front of the net, which means that somewhat becomes a Boqvist's job, which is another like
Well, yeah, they messed that up when Shaw got hurt, because he was playing the sideboard and then sliding into it in front of the net. He was doing the Taves thing.
Right. And there is guys who can do that Shaw on this team.
They were having Soderbergh in front of the net, and in the first game that they put Soderbergh in that role, I think Kane scored a power play goal with Soderbergh screening the goalie perfectly, because Soderbergh is like 6'3". He's huge.
And Soderbergh has played a lot of power play time over the last few seasons.
It's true. And he's big, but he's not very fast. So that's actually kind of a perfect role for him, because he can get there and just stay there. And he's 6'3", 210. So it's difficult for guys to move him. But if you want him like flying around the zone elsewhere, you know, it's not really his thing.
He's got to be more than 210.
Well, that's what is, you know, maybe in pads he's 220.
How fair. We got to get him up to Anisimov levels.
Well, I'm sure there's plenty of fine dining options in Chicago now available to him if he wanted to pack on a few more pounds.
Or just power squats.
Or just power squats. Yeah, that'll work too. Well, gentlemen, I think that's going to – I didn't have many other burning thoughts from the two games. I mean, against Detroit, like, you know, they won. Nothing to get other than the Kurashev goal, nothing to get too wildly excited about. The process can still improve, but they're still winning, so I can't hate things too much. I know it was a while ago that they happened, but the two Columbus games last Thursday and Saturday, any burning thoughts about any of those? I barely even remember those games. I know the Thursday night game was a disaster, that they lost 6-5 and got outpossessed as bad as they have in about 7 years, I think, when I looked it up. And then they won a 3-2 game in overtime on Saturday. So, and anything that stood out for you two guys about those games?
Yeah, the Brinkhead is, I think, on pace for like a 40-goal season over 82 games, and he's just having a season.
That's one guy that, like, I remember when he had his breakout 30-goal season. And, you know, he's a little bit smaller, but a right-handed shot that scored 30 goals. Your immediate thought was Patrick Sharp, because that was Sharp's thing. Right-handed shot scored usually in the 30s. And then DeBrincat scored the 40-goal season. And I feel like calling him or making Patrick Sharp, the best comp for him, I think that's underselling it. Like, I think DeBrincat might have a higher offensive ceiling. And he also, like, he's had a few back checks and stick lifts and swipes of the puck that were very, dare I say, Hossa-esque.
Yeah, I think he's definitely like one of the best players under 5'9" or so. And he's on that.
That's what, six guys?
Yeah, he's on that line with Braden Point and like maybe Kyler Yamamoto.
He is one of the best players in the NHL that's from Farmington Hills, Michigan, for sure.
He is,
when I finally write the article about what Mighty Ducks players they are, he's going to be Ken Wu. but you know, the Brinkett Sharp comparison is pretty much there, because it's kind of like he's not as fast as Sharp, but if you hit his stick, he's going to put it in. Like, he's got to receive the pass, and the couple times he couldn't settle it, everyone's all bummed out. But that's a lot of times bad ice, like in Dallas. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the guy's on a tear. You guys are also right. And then the other thing about Columbus is Tortorella went with a quarter zip blazer combo. He kind of looked like a serial killer. Like, who does that?
Tortorella, apparently. Clearly. Well, apparently, it sounds like some of the reports out there, he's just doing whatever he can to get fired. So that might be a fun subplot to watch the season, is just to see what Tortorella does next. Just standing down there behind the bench yelling, "I'm going to do whatever I want. I dare you to fire me."
Well, yeah, he's got one line, and both guys are going to leave in the offseason. So it's like,
oh, well.
He's got one line and one pair.
Exactly. Oh, boy.
There's a lot. One line, one pair.
But yeah, no.
One line, one pair, no hope.
The Patrick Sharp comparisons do sort of undersell the Brinkhead, but there's no like 40-goal scorer in my memory of the Blackhawks.
Well, yeah,
like, to compare him to.
Yeah, like
he's not Kane.
Yeah, he's not
Patrick Kane.
He doesn't have like quite the playmaking ability of Kane. And I don't know if Panarin ever got up to 40 in Chicago, but I don't think he's Panarin I don't know if he's that either yet. He's setting the mold for himself, and he added an empty netter tonight, so he's up to 9 goals in 14 games. If you project that over an 82 game season, that is 52.7 goals.
Shit.
So, yeah, that's not bad.
No.
Yeah. All right. Well, so, I think we can put a bow on this part of the podcast and come back on the other side of this and look ahead to next week's games and probably have better food takes than we did last week, because I think somebody other than me is going to come up with one. So come on back on the other side of this timeout and see what that's all about.
This is advertiser content brought to you by Frito-Lay.
Hello, I'm Chip Murphy, here to get you ready for the big tournament. Tonight we'll break down... We break down who will be cutting... Cut! What are you two doing?
Sorry, Chip. Prez here got his feathers ruffled when I told him Ruffles has zero chance of winning the title.
And I was letting Dip know that she is not taking into account Ruffles' iconic ridges.
Guys, it's March. We have to start talking about the tournament.
We are. It is the 2023 Frito-Lay Snack-It.
We're talking about big-time matchups between Cheetos, Smartfood, Lay's, Sun Chips, and more.
Just head to the Frito-Lay Snack Bracket and vote for your favorite chip, pretzel, or dip for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks.
This sounds great. Keep up the good work.
Just go to Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends 4-3-2023. Void where prohibited. Here's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome back to Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. And as I promised before the break, wanted to touch on a few other things before we get out of here. One of the items that broke on Wednesday, and I'm probably going to say this name wrong, so I'm going to apologize in advance, but the Blackhawks are reportedly interested in another Russian winger whose name is Dmitry Zafyarov, I think. Forgive me if I said that wrong. The name of his team is Torpedo Nizhny. So,
hell yeah.
Yeah, that great team name. Great team name, which, by the way, Dan the Torpedo's best boat in Hydro Thunder by a mile. But... Yeah, Zafyarov, he turns 27 in March. He's third in the KHL in scoring right now. And Mill and Shepard, I know each of you guys have burning KHL thoughts. But just really quickly, allegedly Detroit is after him as well because, of course.
Russians in Detroit.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know how much else to say about him. Like, it was kind of a – my KHL radar is obviously not functioning so well and never really has. So I really don't know much about this guy. I will say, it's if you look a few of his he's played in some international games for Russia, and he obviously has his team in the KHL. Every now and then he's wearing number 88, and I don't think that's such a coincidence because he has a very offensive-minded game. There's a few goal highlights up at secondcityhockey.com on the article. He scores one of these goals one-handed. Another goal, he just literally skates circles around his opponents and then ends up burying one right under the bar. So definitely some skill there. I have no idea if he's going to sign with the Blackhawks or not. Even if he does sign, he probably wouldn't be eligible until next season. But we do know how well the Blackhawks have done with European and Russian imports lately. So, Mill Shepard, your burning KHL thoughts.
If the European scouting department of the Chicago Blackhawks likes him, then I like him. And also, fun fact, he was a former teammate of Scott Powers at the Athletics' favorite player, Max Shalinov. So
there it is. It's actually the long con. They really just want Shalinov to show up, and they're going to get this guy to come with as a deal. It's like the Hossa Kopetsky thing where they signed Hossa, but they also brought in Kopetsky just because that was Hossa's buddy. So
the thing they should have done with Shipachayev and Panarin, where they brought both in and formed a line with them. Yeah.
And then, who would they have traded the other guy for after they were unable to afford him too?
Kopetsky scored in game one of the final.
He did. Fresh out of the box, right?
Everybody scored in that fucking yeah. game though.
Yeah.
KHL thoughts for me are simply, like Shepard said, if he's European and they like him, bring him over. While I'd prefer one of my countrymen, like a Jack Roslovich, so I can bring my big Serbian flag to drape over section 329, that probably won't happen. So sure, bring over more Russians.
Who is the best Serbian hockey player?
don't know, probably me. They don't play over there. All right. I can skate at least. Like, I don't know if they can. They don't have rinks yet. They just got a golf course.
I'm aware they're playing baseball in Serbia. It's not exactly widespread, but
they're all big. So like, they're all going to look like those, like Zadorov or something. They're better off with basketball.
That's true. And that's entirely the dream team's fault.
Like, I'm the shortest person in my family and I'm 6 feet tall. So
it must be nice.
It's weird.
So yeah, so there's our burning KHL thoughts for everyone that was really, really looking forward to those. And then the other thing, I forgot to mention this during our earlier segment, but did you know that Kevin Lonkinen has more points than Alexis Lafreniere right now?
Not quite the rookie's points leader, but he's doing great. He scored 2 points, which is wild for a goalie.
Lafreniere has played 14 games and he has one goal for the Rangers.
Dude, all these guys getting Lafreniere and whoever else, they all get the only guy who's worth the shit is McDavid right now for Matthews, all these number one picks.
Yeah, and Connor McDavid scored his 500th career point, which
in 300 some games.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie though, starting to feel like empty calories for me.
Well, yeah, he plays in Edmonton.
It's just like I'm still amazed by him and the things he can do, and he's. I don't think there's still some argument out there, but I think he's the best hockey player in the world. But they need to save him from Edmonton pretty soon because Edmonton is just. Oof.
Yeah, I think we all thought it was going to be a bit like the Sidney Crosby thing where they were shitty, but they had everybody in the system. So then they built to a great team. Mm-hmm. And besides Draisaitl, he has nobody.
Right.
Right. Especially with Klefbom hurt.
Yeah. They had four number one picks in a decade and just nothing. I mean, they got like David, but you should have a dynasty if you get four number one picks in a decade.
I mean, to be fair, they brought in Peter Chiarelli and he just ruined it. So,
now we know the moral of that story. Do not hire Peter Chiarelli.
And I have like nothing like for or against Edmonton. Like I'm so indifferent about them, but it's just like, how do you fuck that up?
By trading Taylor Hall for Adam Larson.
That's exactly how, Mill. Yeah, Shepard just told you.
That was brutal. That was like one of the worst trades in recent history.
Can you imagine how good Taylor Hall would be on Connor McDavid's wing?
Dude, Taylor Hall was good everywhere else.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, even though New Jersey sucks, he won the fucking MVP. It's like, I just, and I'm sorry, like, I'm going off on a tangent, but it's just, I don't understand. That's
all right. I'm entertained.
I just don't how to understand. Like, they had so many first overall picks. They're good players too. They're not Lafreniere or whatever. They're like all good players.
Yeah. And what did they get for Eberle? Because they traded Eberle too, and they got nothing for him.
You know, I think part of like the appeal of sports is that you think the people in the front offices and all that are really intelligent and really know what they're doing and have like a reason to that position. Every now and then you see shit that happens. It's only hockey. Like every now and then things seem to happen. They traded, I believe, for Ryan Strome, by the way, but
yeah, exactly.
Every now and then something happens in hockey. You're like, what the fuck are these guys doing?
Hockey is so stupid.
Yeah, it is. I'm not saying I would be good at the job, but I'm telling you, I might not be much worse.
I would not be the worst NHL GM.
It's like the coaches are like that too. It's like a cycle. It's a circus where they just cycle through different teams.
Mm-hmm. Which is why when the Blackhawks hired Jeremy Colleton, I was kind of happy that they went outside the box for someone different. Like, all right, well, at least I can entertain that. They didn't just hire, you know, a retread from the mid-2000s for no reason.
But yeah, but like now we're all like, oh, we should have got a love you letter or whoever just because they have a system.
Yeah, so. Yes. I mean, I would like them to go outside the box again after Jeremy Colleton, but they're not going to do it. They're going to absolutely go with the retread.
Oh, they're going to promote Mark Crawford. There's no doubt in my mind that if they ever let Colleton go, Mark Crawford is the next guy.
I don't know if he's the full-time, long-term guy though. I think he might be a mid-term
He'll be there when Colleton gets fired, but then they're gonna shove the 96 abs up our ass because him and Quenville were both there. It's like, yeah, but nobody was gonna lose with Waugh and Sakic in that roster, like,
yeah,
right,
that's not the Hawks right now. Yeah, the whole that night, you know, it's like, come on, give me a break.
All right. Well, now that we've completed our mid-90s hockey flashback, I think we need to shift to our food take for the week after my botched handoff from last week where I just suggested that a delicious dessert treat known as punchkis are good.
Where I've been sending you memes all week.
Yeah. Yeah, and I feel like I was getting heckled by every grocery store I went to for the last week because there were just boxes of them everywhere, mountains of them, because that's what happens in this area around the start of Lent. I didn't go anywhere today, so I don't know if they're still out, but I guess it's Shepherd's turn today. So, Shepherd, lay some food thoughts on us.
All right, it's a two-pronged approach.
Oh, okay. Can we eat prongs?
Yes. In every situation, without exception, dark chocolate is better than milk chocolate.
Ooh.
The second prong of this is, except for white chocolate macadamia cookies, where the macadamia nut is the star, white chocolate, I could do without. I would not mind if it didn't exist.
So you offered one thing that was an absolute, and then you contradicted it in the next sentence.
No, I didn't contradict it, because there's three types of chocolate, and I mentioned each of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is there's a time and place for all... Well, no, it sounds like there's only time and place for two. There's a time and place for dark chocolate, and then the white chocolate...
Has its situation, yes. It has
about, all right, then what about milk chocolate?
I honestly... It's for kids, and that's probably it.
Wow. Okay.
It's to get them used to chocolate. And then you start experimenting with the good stuff.
We're still talking about
food. Out of context, that's a bit, you know. Yeah.
Clip that for us, please.
Yes, sir.
All right. Mill, your reaction to Shepherd's chocolate rules.
So I'm mostly indifferent on milk versus dark because I like both fine, but when it comes to like sweets, I'm more of like a fruit, sweet and sour like type of candy person.
Okay.
Not as much chocolate. I like chocolate, but like I can't eat too much of it. I like both, but my favorite is white chocolate. Hershey's like cookies and cream, or like the Kisses that have the sugar cookie flavor and they're just white chocolate. Like I can eat a whole bowl of that. So I think it's just something with my palate and like the darker candies I can't do as much. Like I had some dark chocolate today on some mint bark and it was really good.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, I can support much of what you said, because like dark chocolate is very good, and I've grown to appreciate it much more as I've grown up and food palate matures and all that. I still think like if you're doing large quantities, so if you're eating more chocolate than you need to, I think dark chocolate can get overwhelming. So that's why you mentioned this earlier in our Slack chat. So I was able to rehearse this earlier, and I'm glad, because otherwise I would have said something just as dumb as I did last week. But the idea was that dark chocolate is better in small doses, smaller quantities. You get better quality out of it. But if you got a higher quantity, and I don't know where to draw this line, but if you've got a higher quantity, you want to go for milk chocolate.
Like a whole bar, maybe. But if you're eating a whole bar, don't do that.
Yeah, like if you're eating my thought was like a Nestle Crunch bar, just the standard one, not the king size. Like,
yes.
If that was dark chocolate, that would be too much.
But I would like to experience that as dark chocolate, though, because I don't think they have a version of that.
I don't know if they do, but that like aren't Mr. Good Bars dark chocolate and peanuts?
Maybe, and those are good.
You know what I think though? The way they make milk chocolate, it's meant to be palatable with other things like peanut butter and nougat and stuff. And they
dark chocolate works with those things too. Like dark chocolate caramel is easily better than milk chocolate caramel.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but it's the whole idea is to get people addicted to buy more products.
Yes. Yeah. So that's a problem to me.
But so like to me, it's like if you're gonna dip some strawberries in some dark chocolate and have a glass of wine, like I'm all for that. But
oh man, you're even classy.
Well, no, we're just drinking.
Right. But now we're talking about like how dark chocolate is classy and how dark chocolate is like healthy, is also healthier for you. It's not addictive. It's not addictive. It's got nutritional benefits. I think dark chocolate is just plain better.
It's got more sex appeal.
Yeah.
If you're speaking of sex appeal, the best dark chocolate concoction I've had is the Bare Naked, I think it's dark chocolate and strawberry granola thing that they have.
Mm, yeah, those are good.
Yeah, that's good stuff. So, all right. I got nothing else. I think I've exhausted all of my chocolate takes. Anything else? Oh, I just will say the now that we keep talking about chocolate, I have stuck in my head the tag team Geico commercial.
Chocolate. Oh, dude, yeah. That's the best ad on TV.
Every time it comes on TV, that commercial puts a smile on my face.
The dude starts dancing and his girlfriend or whatever just gets pissed and walks away.
Yeah. Or it's the daughter walks in. The dad walks in with the daughter. The dad and the mom start dancing. The daughter just
acts. Yeah, I don't really know who's playing who. I just know it's tag team and it's sick.
Yeah.
We love that.
Yeah, love to see it. all right. Well, I think we've covered all the usual angles and everything else. I mean, we could talk about the games next week, but you know, play better, win, you know, there you go. any other thoughts on chocolate or the Blackhawks or Demir Zafirov?
The Blackhawks power play is dark chocolate and the Blackhawks 5-on-5 play is milk chocolate.
Wow. How dare you?
Yeah. It's true. They're one of the worst teams at 5-on-5 this year.
I mean, the Blackhawks penalty kill is like that cookies and cream ice cream you get in the 100 level in the waffle cone.
So
I think it's Superman. It's good in qualities, but you need to like control how much quantity you have of it.
Superman ice cream. Oh man.
Yeah, too much though is.
Yeah, exactly. Don't put them on ice 8 times. But put them on ice 3 times and they'll kill off all the penalties.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's a good note to end on.
Yeah. The Blackhawks power play, or is it the power play or the penalty kill?
Penalty kill Superman.
Penalty kill Superman ice cream. Got it. I'm sure by the end of the season, we will have every aspect of this team narrowed down to an ice cream flavor.
Yes.
So you guys can get to work on that. And keep an eye out for that article at Second City Hockey. I'm sure it's going to appear at some point. But thank you very much for listening to this episode. You can, again, visit the website, secondcityhockey.com, for all the Blackhawks news. Follow us all on Twitter, Mills at Mill182. I am at _ Dave Melton. Shepherd is at Shepherd Price. The main account is 2ND City Hockey. Stay tuned to these airwaves where we're going to have our midweek, usually Musings on Madison's episodes. Shepherd has revived the Monday morning deep dishes where they're going to go more on a individual topic and dive deeper into that, which, by the way, Shepherd, I'm appreciating that you're telling everyone I played hockey, and now people are thinking that maybe I played like in college or high school instead of just being a really like mediocre beer leaguer for my entire life. So thank you for that.
You have played hockey. That's that's the level that is in my mind. I have not played hockey.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, I've played hockey in the sense that I don't know. Yeah, they're just, yeah.
You still might get traded for Taylor Hall.
Exactly. So yeah. And then, again, secondcityhockey.com is where we find all our stuff, all our podcasts, rate, review, subscribe, wherever it is you get your podcasts. We very much appreciate any 5-star reviews we can get. And, yeah, just hang around. The Blackhawks are kind of fun, and we're going to try to have as much fun with it. Even if they start to look like shit, we'll still try and have fun with it. So hopefully we'll see all you back here on these airwaves next week. But for Mill, for Shepherd, I'm Dave. Thanks again for listening. And as always, go Hawks.